Welcome, everybody. This is BNP Weekly episode 121. We are doing a lot of them.
Surprise, surprise.
Yes. Wow, that's a lot. That is a lot. That's more than a... Anyway, so my name is Cesar Juvonen. Yes, I'm a program manager in the Microsoft 365 platform side. In the BNP Weekly, we talk about what's the latest in the Microsoft and community around the Microsoft 365. With me as the co-host is Waldek. Who are you?
Hi, everybody. My name is Waldek Mastigas. I am cloud developer advocate for Microsoft 365. And today with us is a guest from Canada. We just heard that the snow is melting. We have good news. The snow is melting in Canada.
Yes.
Mr. Nick Charlebois. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, folks. Well, actually, afternoon for you, Dan. Thanks for having me over. Yeah, so the snow is finally melting. It's sunny outside. It's 6 degrees Celsius. So I don't know exactly what that accounts for in Fahrenheit. But yeah, snow is finally melting. Spring is almost here.
Almost.
I think we're around
the
same.
Poor Dan is going to be like the same another wave of snow and hail, right?
But now, Nick, you pretty recently joined to Microsoft Craft Team, and with your teammates Jeremy Thake and Seb and Fabian, and who am I missing?
Ryan.
Absolutely, Ryan Jacket. And I think there's still an open position, which is really cool. So it is a pretty awesome team. And obviously, then the team is reporting to Yina as well. Before we go to your current role, can you talk about your history, your kind of a background? Where do you come from? How do you ended up actually joining the Microsoft? And what did you do before moving to this thing?
Sure. All right. So we need to go back to, I want to say, 2002, right? So I started working for the federal government of Canada. So the city I live in, it's actually called Gatineau, which is on the Quebec side, right? So for those of you that don't know Canada, there's Canada that speaks French. So this is the region I'm from. And I'm living literally 5 minutes from Ottawa, which is the capital. And this is normally the English-speaking province where most of the federal buildings are located. So I started working there in 2002 as a student. And essentially, I worked for the federal government for almost 14 years. Starting around like 2014, I became a manager in the government. When you're managing the government, you don't have time to do hands-on, right? Most of your time is spent doing paperwork and dealing with people management, right? Yeah. It was great. I was managing a team of about 20 people at the time. We had a pretty good relationship, and you know how it works, right? So you actually have like 3 direct reports, and then you have another team underneath. But things work well. But for me to actually be able to keep my technical edge, which is really where my passion was, I had to go and do overtime every night. So I would literally do 7 to 5, go work for the federal government, come back home, feed the kids, say hi to the kids. Then my wife would take over for an hour or two. I would go in, I would write blog posts, I would answer forums, and I would just try to keep my technical edge, right? Because of that, I managed to get my MVP award in 2014. I was a PowerShell MVP for 2 years. But then it really became hard for me to manage both the technical and the actual management aspect. And at the time, there was somebody working for me that I hired to Microsoft as a premier field engineer that approached me and said, look, we have an opening in Ottawa. Would you be willing to give it a try? And this was something I never thought of doing before. But we had an office in Ottawa for Microsoft. And as an employee of the federal government, you can actually take 2 years leave of absence and try something else, which is amazing. I've never heard of that anywhere else.
Wow.
Before, right? So essentially, you can take up to 2 years and go try something else. And if it doesn't work out, they'll bring you back at the same level, not in the same team, but they'll bring you back at the same level. So I figured, you know what? Now's the time to try it. My kids were 5 and 7 at the time. I'm like, let's give it a shot. So I became a premier field engineer doing SharePoint dev in Ottawa. For those of you that don't know what PSC is, right? So essentially, it used to be very reactive, but it became more proactive, where we're doing a lot of education, we're doing a lot of planning for customers, right? When they want to do like SharePoint deployments, moving to the cloud and so on. That was back in late 2015 that I made the jump, right? Then worked as a PSC for almost 5 years. Lots of travel, I'll be honest. I was out every second week, probably. And then I went back in March 4th, 2020, my manager stepped out. He accepted another role at Microsoft, and he asked me to step in as an acting for him to manage the business team. At the time, we had a team of about 30 people, a mix of consultants and senior field engineers.
Yep.
Guess what happened? The week after I decided to take the new role, the pandemic hit us, right? So it was, I'm not exactly sure if it was the worst or the best timing, but I definitely learned how to drink from the fire hose. So I was what we call a TDM, so technical delivery manager, for 4 months. And then there was this big reorg where MCS and PC split, became two different organizations. And I got back to being what used to be CSE, is now called Customer Engineer. So I did that for another 6 months. And for a long time, I've always been interested in the program management side of things. The urban myth is that you need to be in Seattle to do program management, right? And this is actually...
Hey.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly.
Well,
yeah,
and you're how many of you is there, Vesa? So there's one of you for how many PMC in Seattle? Or
fair point.
No, but I mean, so that's what I thought, right? And then I'm not sure if the pandemic means anything or what, but it seems to be an openness from Microsoft to actually hire people from outside of Seattle. So at one point I was doing the Microsoft Dev podcast with Jeremy and Paul. And at the end of it, I just asked Jeremy, I'm like, look, if you ever hear of any openings and people are open to having people work remotely, let me know. And it happened that he just opened a position within Zoom. So actually went for interview loop and things worked out. So I'm now part of the Microsoft Graph team under Jeremy and Yina. And I'm leading the efforts right now for our clients and partner experience. And I'm focusing on the Microsoft Graph data, which is something new to me. And it's just a great talent. And being able to completely different. I remember the first thing I asked Jeremy when I joined the team is, where do I punch the hours? If I'm CSP, you still use that. That's the same thing as a consultant. You still use.
He was like, "What? You want to do what? You can write them on post-its. You can write them whatever."
But was it still a CP system? Is it a CP system in Canada as well? Was ChangePoint?
Yes. Yeah.
I remember that.
It was everywhere. It was everywhere. Even here in the Netherlands, I used to work with that as a vendor, like way back when. There's like I think 8 years back or so.
Yes,
same thing.
Yeah, so that was
same change point
shift there, but I'm having a blast. I mean, we have such an amazing team, as you pointed out, right? We have Steph, we have Stops, we have Brian. There's another opening right now. I think we have a couple of openings in LATAM. We have one in the US. I think there's one as well for the DevX team in Canada. So the team is growing. The team is definitely growing.
That's
which
cool.
is really that, good that, because of course. Microsoft Graph is fundamental for the success of Microsoft in the future. So it's really good that there's enough people of managing that and making sure that the future direction is looking really good on top of the feature growth. So because your team and Jeremy's team is kind of the coordination team around, and Yina's organization is kind of the coordination team. And then there's say engineers from the feature growth teams doing some of the work as well. So. But it's a massive amount of people nowadays, which is really great.
And then so there's also simple idea, the customers and partners example. Who use the APIs.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's pretty mind-blowing where it's gone from a simple idea and when Yina started driving that like a few years back and then growing to this level already. So it's been insanely successful, which is really, really cool. Now, before we go to other things, I actually wanted to go back in our PFE timeframe and the MCS, because one of the things, I'm an ex-MCS and I'm an ex-services person as well. I used to work 8 years as a consultant. And would you agree, Nick, that that's actually one of the, let's say, hidden gems of Microsoft? Because at least from my perspective, it's one of those organizational, which nobody knows externally that much, PFEs as an example. But the technical skill level is just out of this world in many cases. But then what is a PFE? What are these people? What's happening? What's your take on that? And do you agree on the statement?
Well, so I think I was lucky when I joined PFE, right? I was a SharePoint dev, right? And I've said it from the beginning, being a SharePoint specialist means being a generalist. There's so many things you need to know, right? And as a PFE, you're kind of, I don't want to say thrown under the bus, but that's almost what it is, right? You're showing up at a customer where they have problems and you don't know what your day is going to look like, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Is it going to be an infrastructure problem? Or is it actually going to be a custom code problem? Or is it something in the product, right? So it is interesting. I'll use that word, right? But it's also very, very challenging. So you need to know the product inside out, right? It's not like we're not talking level 300. We're talking level 500. And this is what the customer expects you to know as well. As I said, the role evolved, right? It used to be very reactive. I remember when I started, it was like what I was told the role was going to be is, look, you can get a call on a Sunday because the customer at the other end of the continent has a problem and they're waiting for you like Monday morning for a thing for you to go and troubleshoot their issue. It changed quite a lot, right? I think a lot of customers now were using your MCS to actually make sure they were building the right from the get-go, right? Just as guidance, have somebody in there. And even sometimes, right, just be able to double-check things, right? Just go and say, look, we're going to pass it by Microsoft, right? So can you guys go and validate that we're doing the right thing here?
Yeah.
One thing with TSC, and I'm seeing it like firsthand right now, now that I'm in the PT, is that these folks, MCS, TSC, everybody in services, they're in the field, right? They are experiencing our product first end, right? So when customers are struggling to do things, your PSC are seeing, like they're seeing it right there, right? So it's really good for have that connection back to the product group where, look, we need feedback, right, on the product, right? Like what's working, what's not working. And these guys are seeing it first end. So for sure, I mean, they are, as you pointed out, Veza, the hidden gem in the company, like big time.
Yeah.
Another thing that I'm interested in with, like, especially as you say, like back in the days, PFEs were very much like coming to customers, troubleshoot their environments. And back then, many environments were on-prem and customers would do the wildest things with them. Like they would change things and then they would federate auth and they would do Kerberos and whatnot, like 20 million things. So to what degree do you see like that changed over the years as customers went more to the cloud versus difficulty of the on-premises entanglement of everything and whatnot they would have?
Yeah, so definitely you were seeing brand change, right? I mean, people were focusing more on, I was a dev person, right? So people were focusing more and more on what I call citizen dev approaches, right? Like things like around being able to build like something. So you were seeing less and less traditional dev work being done as folks were moving to the cloud. That's one thing I saw there. But yes, less customization as well. The challenge I had was that being in Ottawa, lots of my customers were federal government. And when I joined in 2015, right? And for the first year, I think most of what I was doing was SharePoint 2007 and 2010 migration over to SharePoint 2016, right? On-prem.
So, yeah.
Right? So it was, there was still a lot of struggle there. But yes, for sure. I mean, it changed completely. People are less likely to go and tweak things that they shouldn't be tweaking, right? Whereas, like, I mean, I started with SharePoint 2002, right?
But I guess it's also, in a way, a reality check, right? I mean, like, being in product group and being internal and maybe even being an MVP, right? For a big part, it's like you live and breathe the latest, greatest, and then you come to a customer and they're like 5 years back and you're like, what is this?
Yeah. No, absolutely. The reality check. Yeah. No, big time. Big time, right? And you could see it, right? I mean, as PFE, we would have those, what we used to call CR calls, where all PFEs, like in the United States and Canada, would get together and discuss problems. And you're sitting there and you're going, wow, like these guys are using like SharePoint Online. They've been using it for years, where I'm still struggling getting my customer out of SharePoint 2010, right? So there was such a disconnect.
There you go.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember even that when I moved in before, I moved into engineering, which was 8 years ago, or it's nine already, but there was already people moving to the cloud. And then you start feeling threatened by yourself because you're not in cloud, but you're being the specialist in on-prem. And then I said, how do I?
The cheese is moving.
But it's been an interesting, let's say, change for the industry in general. And then obviously last year kind of I think pushed over everybody to the cloud because of the move to work remotely 24/7. Well, not 24/7, but still. So completely different different mindset. And nowadays, everybody is kind of accepting that, hey, it's in cloud because it cannot be on-prem because otherwise you can't connect to that at least easily. So
I mean, today, everybody works on their own premises. There you go. Bring your own premises.
True, kind of. Yes, that's true. That is so true. Yeah, yeah. Cool. Now let's partly talk about then, Nick, your current role. You talked about it's Craft Data Connect. Can you explain what is a Craft Data Connect for the people who don't know?
Absolutely. Right. So Microsoft Graph Data Connect essentially allows you to extract your Office 365 data in Vault. That's really what it comes down to. Right. So right now, if you want to go and, for example, you want to grab information about all the emails that have been sent in your organization, right? You want to try to understand who within your organization collaborates with who, right? So what are the collaboration patterns inside your enterprise? One way of doing it might be to scan the from and to of your emails and see what email exchanges are happening, right? But to do that right now, if you were to go and use the Graph REST API, I mean, you're going to be throttled, right? You're going to make so many calls to get everything. It's going to take, first off, it's going to take forever. The Graph wasn't really built for that, right? And you're going to get throttled, right? So those are two problems right now. And the other thing as well is, as an app developer, you need to actually go and grant your app that you're going to be using access to read messages, right? But you're not only granting access to that app to read the from and to, you're also granting it access to read the body of the email, the attachments, right? So you're granting everything. Microsoft Graph Data Connect, when you actually make a request, essentially it's leveraging Azure Data Factory. So you're creating a pipeline, essentially, that pulls down the data from O365, and you can define what schema your app is going to be authorized to go and pull. So you can say, my app is only authorized to go and pull the to from Carbon Copy and the DCC field. That's all. So then the tenant administrator will go in and grant your app access to this. And this is only the data that's going to be pulled down. So you're never going to get the content. And the data stays in the customer's tenant as well, right? So it gets exported as a raw JSON file that can be stored in Azure Data or Azure Storage or in Azure Data Lake. But that's essentially what the tool does. And right now, currently what we have is mostly around the Outlook artifacts, right? So we have messages, we have contacts, users, calendars. We're going to be introducing the Teams chat over the next couple of weeks. We have plans to introduce stuff like usage reports, SharePoint, and other data sets as well. So in a nutshell, that's what Microsoft Graph Data Connect is.
Yeah, that's actually really cool. Do you have more granular permission model than using the standard permission scopes in the Azure AD then? Or how does it actually work? How do you... Or is it just that you're requesting the data pipeline to get created and then the admin has to grant them, and then in the data pipeline, those are the permissions which you're requesting? How does it work?
It's a bit different, right? And again, I'm going to probably make a very bad analogy, but when you're doing the Microsoft permissions, right, the current permissions that you have, you're granting permissions at the artifact level. You're saying you can read messages, you can read groups. Whereas for us, we're saying, yeah, we're going to give you messages, but you're going to have access to the properties inside of that artifact, right? So going a level more granular than what we have right now with that.
Cool. That's actually really cool stuff. And I can figure out, and then you do a massive data analytics, like I said, at the data lakes in Azure for, like, if you're analyzing petabytes and petabytes of data, those are the ones which we're using that. Internally, there's like the logs and execution details without BII information are being analyzed using the Azure Data Lakes. It's just amazing to see petabytes and petabytes of data being available for analytics without any personal information, of course. Now, turning to another topic, there's a big statement behind of your back in the wall which says Microsoft 365 DSC. What is that all about?
Okay, before we talk about Microsoft 365 DSC, we need to talk about what DSC stands for, right? DSC stands for Desired State Configuration. It's something that was introduced with RSL 4, so I want to say back in 2014, right? And it's essentially allowing you to represent configuration as code. And when you're talking about DevOps, I mean, DevOps is a buzzword, right? It's a complete buzzword. But essentially, when I think about it, when people ask me to describe what it is, it's really just a set of good practices, but forces people to consider everything as code, right? You have your application code, which we're all used to managing using application lifecycle management. You have your infrastructure as code using templates, using Terraform. You have your configuration as code using DSC. you have your even your build pipeline now, right? Like everything is as code. You have like your YAML, you have your documentation that's now Markdown, right? So everything can be managed with source control. This is the first really important concept I want to throw out there. So when I started, when I became an MVP, PowerShell MVP back in 2014, I challenged myself to learn all the various areas of PowerShell I wasn't familiar with, and GC was one of them. And it became clear from the get-go that this was going to be an enabler for many organizations I was working with, right, where you have your configuration code. Right? That's your change management right there, right? How many customers I used to go to would say, yeah, somebody changed something in production and broke down the entire system. We're not exactly sure what happened, right? Like no yep. change management, nothing. I saw DSC as a way to actually handle that as customers. When I joined Microsoft, I had this crazy idea of creating something we called reverse DSC, which was essentially a way for us to reverse engineer an environment. You got to remember, when I joined Microsoft, DSC role was really reactive. So going back to the example I gave before, I could get a call on Sunday saying, look, you need to be here tomorrow. So I jump on a plane, fly to Vancouver, land there late on Sunday, show up to the customer and go, all right, so what's the issue? Oh, well, I don't know, our cert stopped working in SharePoint. Okay, so we have like a way of like looking at the configuration. Oh, we need to go and request permission from the admin team in a couple of hours. Like, all right, so it looks like these two servers are not talking with one another. Can we put something in there? Can we put like a fiddler or some type of network sniffing tool? Oh, no, we're not allowed to do it. Okay, can I just check them? Oh, I can't let you touch the keyboard. Like, wow. Like, and literally that issue was so simple to solve, but they flew me across the country just for something that was just related to, like, it was a firewall rule, right? I remember that scenario where I'm like, wouldn't it be cool if before I even jump on a plane, I can just send them a snippet of code, say, please run that. It would just scan their environment. Give me a DSC piece that represents what their environment is like, configuration-wise. No data, no account, nothing. This is the configuration. And as I jump in the plane, I can just spin off like an Hyper-V VM on my computer, deploy their environment. So when I land there, I have a full replica of their configuration. And most of the time, I can even just look at the configuration and say, well, there's a firewall rule right here that's preventing like disport. That's your issue. Yeah. Or I would actually have something that's a replica of their environment on my PC where I can go and install whatever tool I want and I can actually be hands on the keyboard. That was the idea. So we launched that. We released Microsoft Reverse DSC back in 2014, and it was embedded in the SharePoint DSC module that we have. So we can now go to customers and reverse their engineer the environment and spin off a full replica of their farm in our own environment. So a lot of customers starting using that. Replicate their on-prem farm, like production farm, into a dev farm. Now, fast forward in 2018, I mean, it was about time we tried to create something similar for Office 365. So we released, it used to be called SharePoint Online DSC at the beginning because it was only handling SharePoint DSC config. And then it evolved into Office 365 DSC and got rebranded last year to Microsoft 365 DSC.
Exactly.
So the idea is the same, right? It's being able to manage your Microsoft 365 environment configuration as code.
Yeah, and oversimplify things. So at least if people were unable to follow up on, okay, so what's the difference between set of scripts and the DSC script is that you can actually apply the DSC script multiple times to the environment, and it will basically reset the configuration as the script defines. So it's not only for adjusting things and then nobody knows what was adjusted and what was previous state. You basically have the whole farm state in a script. So you can basically anytime say, well, somebody has something here. Let's just apply this and the script will go double check settings and adjust them as needed. But it's basically self-contained, so it doesn't adjust anything if there's no adjustment needed. Is that the right way of saying that?
Cool. It is, right? So essentially the elevator pitch version is that the tool does 16, right? And first off, the tool is open source, completely open source. It's on GitHub. It's available to anybody to go and grab it. The tool does 16, as I mentioned. The first one is the automation. Very easy is you write, DSC is declarative, right? So you essentially write how you want the configuration to be, not what you need to do in order to get there, right? Yep. You actually write what or how the configuration should be. Now you execute that and we're going to apply the configuration. Microsoft 365 DSC is kind of a layer of abstraction when you think about it, because right now, if you're a Microsoft 365 admin, there are several modules you need to go and acquire, right, from a PowerStock standpoint. SharePoint, you need the PN2 module. For PowerApps, there's a PowerApps module. For security and compliance and Exchange Online, there's the Exchange Online Management Cell. There's the, there used to be the Skype for Business Online module, which is now merged with the Teams one. Intune's another one. Azure AD is another one, right? So there's so many dependencies you need. When you install Microsoft 365 DSC, it automatically goes and install all the sub-dependencies for you. So what you can do is you can end up writing one configuration file that will affect, like, that will create like Azure AD group, that will go and create, set your SharePoint sharing settings and so on. So you can actually mix and match. Under the cover, Microsoft 365 DSC will figure out what module fall into. That's the first part. But now you're absolutely right. What's the difference between, aren't we reinventing the wheel if we're saying, look, we're just making it declarative now. DSC by default is good at doing two things, right? Bring your environment in the desired state, make sure it stays in the desired state. So this is where the second pillar, if you want, second thing that DSC can do is monitor your environment. By default, every 15 minutes, the tool anywhere where you're running DSC from, so that's any machine that has PowerShell 5 or PowerShell 4 and above installed, will do what we call consistency checks. So it will essentially clean your tenant and make sure it stays in that desired state. If it detects any configuration drift, it can take action on it, right? It can either log an event in Event Viewer on the machine that you're using for monitoring. It can automatically fix it, or it can go and alert you by email if you're using, let's say, Azure DevOps or GitHub Act.
Yeah.
So you're going to get an email saying, look, at 11:05 this morning, we detected a drift in this security and compliance, data loss prevention rule that was supposed to be enabled, and it was set to disabled.
Yeah.
So you can actually have it automatically fixed. So that's the big difference there, is the monitoring piece, really.
Yeah, and that's actually really, really cool for sure. First of all, the desired state setting is really, really cool. So the fact that you can, it's not about configuration, it's about defining what you want to have, and you can reapply the setup, so to say, as many times as needed, and making sure that it is actually on that target and as the status. But then the monitoring is actually really, really cool, because that's quite often also the problem, that people don't necessarily understand who changed where, or was it an app, and where and which, and that might have actually compromised even a tenant in the worst case scenario. So having that kind of a monitoring setup available feels like almost like something which you should have natively within a product.
In product,
Or
yeah,
within,
I mean, like,
the, within,
and also,
but it's building, well, but, those kind of things takes time, of course.
Well, so. Yeah, and also the fact, right, that I think that another thing is that there are so many different places you go to, right? Because like there's admin center for Teams, for SharePoint, for PowerPoint, for everything. Like everything has their own place.
Yeah.
And this falls in this in-between stage of who owns this. Like, like it doesn't fall on a team, because there is no M365 wide team, admin team, right? Yeah. So it's like and apparently we have open source product that does that, like that gives you this single entry point for admins, especially to have just one entry point and to know everything from a single place, as opposed to every day at 8 a.m. I'm going to start journey basically as a doctor, like go one door by another, checking each patient. Is everything fine? Is everything fine? Is everything? And then by the time you're done, there is time for another round.
Yeah. And from a monitoring perspective as well, we're seeing a lot of users use the reverse DSC, right? So there was a segue to my story about reverse DSC, by the way. It's natively baked in the tool, right? So when you install the tool, what you can do is you can reverse engineer your tenant. So essentially extract DSC config from one environment. But what you can do with this is you can take it and apply it to a brand new tenant, or apply it on top of an existing tenant, essentially cloning your Microsoft 365 configuration over.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, what they're doing is they just want to do an assessment, right? They want to compare two tenants. They have a prod, and let's say you're doing an acquisition. That's probably the best example, right? You have two tenants now. You want to figure out what's different between the two. Good luck figuring that out on your own, right? There are so many places you need to go and test. That's the reality, right? With a tool, you do an export of both.
Just two windows side by side, and it goes.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yes. Well, no. It's not two.
Where the check boxes
two
are,
monitors,
right?
for two tenants, and then each one 10 browsers.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But then with the tool, natively, what we'll do is we'll actually compare the configuration, and we'll generate a report that's going to tell you exactly what the differences are. And in some cases, we can create what we call blueprints, which are enhanced if you want configuration. And not only will they tell you where the discrepancies are, but they'll also point you to docs articles with recommendation on why these settings are probably not in the desired state.
And is there also a way, like, for example, like every SI out there has probably their, call it best practices to set up a tenant, like for team security or best practices around Power Platform. Is there a way to extract the config and then apply to it, call it rules? Like, okay, if I have that, like our practices says that your config should be like this, and then you can just automate the whole check and then have a report saying it's all green, or this is green, this is orange, or this is red.
Absolutely, right? This is the concept of blueprints. So we created something similar for back to school season in the States. We created two what we call blueprints, one for K-12 schools and one for higher education. And essentially what it was a set of recommended configurations to get people up and running with Teams, right? So if you were a school and you didn't have any Teams present, what you could do is just take that blueprint and apply it directly on your tenant. And you knew that you were going to be up and running with Microsoft recommended best practices. Now, if you already had a Teams presence, and I'm going to reuse an expression I heard from one of my customers, but it's holding by duct tape and tie rod, right? Because you're not exactly sure how it was configured. What you can do is you can actually assess.
Apply it.
Say, all right. Or not even apply it, right? You can do an assessment. It's like, here's how I configured it. I'm pretty sure it's not configured as it should, but this is how it should be. So tell me what's different, right? So they could actually generate the discrepancy report. That was one thing. The one challenge, and this is something that can't easily be done with DSC, is you cannot have conditional logic, right? What I mean is, yes, you can have a rule that says, if you have this enabled, then you need to have, let's say, an Azure AD conditional access policy. No, this is what you need, right? It's not, if you have this, then you need this. It's really, this is a snapshot of what we recommend. So it is a blocker in some advanced scenario, but essentially, if you have a tenant that is configured the way it should, so you can almost use it as a golden image, extract this, and then that becomes your cookie cutter for other tenants.
Maybe in a way you could solve it in a way that you have additional tool or additional scripts that you would overlay on top of DSC you exported, and then you can use that as your logical tool that can do this kind of if-then.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm saying, right? So again, DSC is really the framework, exactly, right? And then you can build whatever you want on top of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's really, really cool stuff. We'll, of course, add notes on the blog post related and all of this stuff, what we're covering here. But now, watching the clock, let's jump on the articles and do some discussion what has happened within the past week. And then we'll come back on closing notes. And there's a lot of articles this week, so we're not going to deep dive on all of them. So let's start with a Microsoft article. So first of all, last week we announced first small thing related on the Microsoft Viva Connections. There's much more to come, but Viva Connections, the desktop, is basically available starting from last week. This goes really well. This is going to take like
when you watch this.
Depending on when you're watching this. So Viva Connections desktop for Microsoft Teams is available starting from last Wednesday. And there's a lot of excitement actually in the ecosystem and in the partner ecosystem related on finally being able to do this more efficiently. So basically integrating SharePoint Online directly in the Microsoft Teams with additional capabilities. So in the past, you were able to do that, but now you actually see the navigation and you're able to move in. There's deep linking, there's additional settings and all of that stuff. And a super important thing to realize here with the Viva desktop, which we're going to talk about actually this week in the community calls as well, that you can define what are these elements and what are the experience. So you can define, we as a Microsoft, we don't actually dictate what is the Viva connection. It's basically intended to be for you to expose to your global intranet or your corporate communicational intranet directly in Microsoft Teams. You can then build or include extensibility, whatever the web parts are, capabilities, whatever they do. It's up to you how to actually do that. Now, a lot of excitement. I think this video has already more than 6,000 views and all of that stuff. So it's getting a lot of views from that perspective. And if this first step is super easy to set up, it does require the latest version of SharePoint Online PowerShell. And there's a script which we're providing for making the creation of the manifest file, which is then deployed to the Microsoft Teams. Super important to also understand that this is just the first start for Viva Connections, and there's a lot of other stuff coming later this year as well. This wasn't the Viva Connection. This is one part of the Viva Connection. So that's the important piece. Now, what else? There was a What's New in Microsoft Teams February and March. So really cool summary, again, listing all of the awesome new capabilities in Microsoft Teams site. We're not going to go through all of them this time, just saving some time, but a lot of improvements coming up across the environments as well, across the features. The same applies for the Teams phones. So additional settings, additional options, reactions. Yeah, we've been having this internally for a long time. It's always actually problematic to know what's actually out internally and what's out externally. So, but that's what you get when you're
doing. This is new. Okay.
So, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the same thing for SharePoint. A lot of new stuff on the SharePoint side. Obviously, Viva Connection is the future of for the SharePoint. So, getting the Microsoft Teams and SharePoint truly integrated as a one service and with the mobile experiences as well. The mobile capabilities are going to release later this year as an example, but there's a lot of good excitement over there. And a lot of other things as well, like the SharePoint app bar, which roughly is, I think it's now in 10 or 20% in targeted release. There was a small hiccup and that's slightly delaying getting that globally out, but it should be there within a matter of days, and a lot of other stuff as well. So great improvements across the board, including Microsoft List side. Now, on the Craft side, GetCraft change notification delivered to Azure Event Hubs, really, really good thing as well. So getting more scalability and reliability related on those Microsoft Craft change notifications. And obviously, well, it's Azure behind of the scenes anyway for everything in Microsoft 365. So getting Azure Event Hubs behind into the game as well is super, super useful. Accelerate your app adoption of MSIL for Node.js. That's coming out as well. So identity changes, making things more easily available, super, super important as well. Hopefully at some point, identity is kind of a secondary thing, like it should be. So we have, I think we're getting there gradually. So better tooling and documentation for the identity so that people can concentrate on the business logic rather than how do I get the token? So which is always the classic challenge. What's new? The admins for Microsoft 365 apps for enterprise. So good article on that one as well. So there's a new centralized app catalog, which can be used to centrally deploy from an administrative perspective applications. And that's in the Microsoft 365 App Center as well. And that's now GA. So good stuff as well. Microsoft Graph Fundamentals now in Microsoft Learn. Waldeck, you had a role on this one, didn't you?
Not really.
Not really. Well, however, it's coming from your team, so, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, just because it's from my team doesn't mean I did it, right? So there are some other folks.
I'm saying you had a role.
Yes. I cheered on the sidelines to help others do it. Yes.
There we go.
So anyways, TLDR. Like my team released the other week a new learning path for the Microsoft Graph. So if you are looking into start building apps with the Microsoft Graph, like this is the go-to place, probably the easiest way for you to learn Graph in a structured way that doesn't assume that you have any pre-existing knowledge or experience with anything, including identity. So we explain it all, and it's very much beginner level.
Explain everything.
Everything you need to know to build
to get
use
started.
Graph.
Absolutely. And the cool thing is that these are kind of a consumable size. So what is Microsoft Graph 20 minutes, configure and getting started on authentication 38, access user photo information 17 minutes. So really not too long, but to the point, which is always
exactly
important.
They're in chunks, so you can even skip parts that you already know, right? And there will be more modules coming out in coming weeks. So stay tuned.
Absolutely. Now, there was Microsoft Graph Fundamentals Learning Path Module 1, a summary basically from Louis Fries, and she's starting to learn that and going through things.
Module, so, yeah, and she shares her experiences.
Yep, Exactly, and that's the partner module one, and then there's the module two as well for the experience. And then we also had an article from Peter Pitchkir, SPFX image editor sample playing with Canvas. So this is actually a really cool web part, which is going to be demoed in the community call later this week as well, related on embedding any image or modifying images directly on the page, which is really, really cool. So you can actually adjust the images on fly. So pretty cool stuff as well. Now, there was a CLI for Microsoft 365 version 3.8. Anything super special going to call out in here?
It is new release. We have new commands and new features, so we would definitely encourage you to give it a try and tell us what you think.
Cool. Copy a list with the list items to another site from Will Holland. So that's actually really cool, using BMP PowerShell. So getting content from one site to another site. So kind of a content migration operation in a simple way. Obviously, if it's a large amount of data, please take advantage of migration providers, because they have scale and tooling for those kind of things as well. Add developer PowerShell and developer command prompt to Visual Studio to Visual to Windows Terminal. So how to do that from Yannick Rickmond. So getting things more integrated and directly in the Windows Terminal. So I should probably finally start learning to use that. Commander has been my tool for years. Now, João Ferreira, how to create and install Viva Connections application from a Mac OS. So there was this PowerShell script which was released, but that's only for SharePoint Online Management Shell, which is only unfortunately available in Windows platform. So there is, however, a special commandlets from the CLI for Office 365 or BMP PowerShell. So those two options are actually available for you to take advantage as well. So then that enables you to actually get the pages submitted and as a Viva Connections experience. And there's the how to create a Viva desktop connection using BMP PowerShell. So a kind of a sibling article, exactly the same story as well. So create a Viva Connections app using BMP PowerShell, publish BMP company app. So it's been a really focus area for a lot of the blog posts last week. So same topic, Leon Armstrong. Good summary on that one as well. How to get started, what are the options and all of that stuff, and how will the experience look like. So good to see the excitement in the community for this. Then Tracy had a Microsoft Teams SharePoint permissions, 7 things to consider. And this is basically 7 things to consider on the permission models, understanding how they work, settings, what are the member permissions in Teams, all of that stuff, how do they behave and impact the experiences across the services and SharePoint permissions. I'm not going to say anything around them. Almost tempted to say. not going to comment anything on that. Now, then SharePoint tips and tricks. You actually, Waldeck, had this one. So this is from Ishai Saki, who used to be an active really on this blog. And basically, like you can see here, missed me. I'm back. So good stuff, like summaries of how to do things. And this is a good example of a really, really valuable thing. So making Workbench full width. So if you want to
just
do that, you can actually do that.
Small tip, but invaluable,
exactly.
Absolutely.
So really cool. Now, this is from Victor Villene inside the Viva Connection desktop app, or bring your own Viva app. So this is really around the fact that you can actually technically, what Victor did, he analyzed the code inside a PowerShell script and then explains what the code actually does. So what does the PowerShell script do? And what if you would create that solution and manifest by yourself? That's what this is all about. So really cool stuff as well. Mark Anderson, my dear Microsoft, determined solution usage for your tenants shouldn't be like this. Call out basically on lack of APIs on certain areas, which is completely fair feedback as well. So getting stuff like, okay, how many solutions deployed where and which instances, we should have that information available for sure. So too difficult right now. From Peter Winstra, scrolling down, many running flows in Power Automate. So basically, his findings and some of the flows are ended up running in multiple instances and basically story around that one. From Recording 365 site, from Robert Crane, Microsoft 365 connectivity testing tool, really cool as well. So basically validating network connectivity. So making sure if there's a problem, technical problems, is it network connectivity? Is it something else which is causing that? So really cool summary on that one. Then from April Dunham, Power Platform Rewind Mark 2021. So basically a summary of what has happened in the Power Platform within the past month. And really great videos. April is doing an awesome job on her YouTube channel for sure. And then from Elio, Microsoft Essential Extension released for VS Code. A lot of attention actually last week on this one. So basically making it easier for writing. When you're writing your craft, URLs, and they say IntelliSense and
IntelliSense,
all that.
IntelliSense, yeah.
Really clear, cool stuff. Good. We are running out of time because we do have a hard stop. What's happening this week? Nick, let's start with you. Anything interesting what you can share?
So this week, actually, depending on when this is going to be released, I'm going to be hosting my first community call for Microsoft Graph, which is exciting, right? It always feels weird when you're going on the other side, right? Last week was MVP Summit. It was my first time monitoring a session there. And then this week, community call. So feel free to join that. That is happening every first Tuesday of the month. Other than that, it's going to be very, very busy with trying to juggle with the fact that schools are closed in Quebec right now, at least in my city, with two young kids at home. So I'm going to try to do my best.
Yeah, exactly. And the family, balancing family and work, it's always challenging for sure.
It is.
Now, Waldeck, what's on your table?
We're working on a new release for our CLI. We have new features, new ideas for
Surprise.
Its new improvements. Surprise, exactly. Other than that, together with my teammates, we're working on new modules for Learn for around Microsoft Graph, MGT. So that's coming too. And next week, there is a big event by me and my teammates around Microsoft Graph. So if you want to learn how to use Graph and build apps on Microsoft 365, please join us. It will be a 2-hour stream and you will see some cool apps like being almost built in real time.
Almost built in real time.
Almost.
On my side, we're looking into doing a starting a public beta for SharePoint Framework 1.12.1. Basically going live with that and getting a that available in NPM for beta release so that people can validate their solutions and avoid any surprises whenever the 1.12.1 actually goes out. And that's a new process what we'll start to do starting from this version forward to increase the quality as well. And then plenty of other stuff for sure. So Viva Desktop connections and community calls and all of that stuff. But hey, normal week. It is what it is. So, but thank you, Nick, for joining us this week. Great discussion. Great to catch up as always, and hopefully everything goes well in the community call later today, actually. So we won't be getting this one out before that, but still, unfortunately. But I think that's it then. So we'll come back with a new BMP Weekly within a week. Thanks everybody for watching or listening. Cheers.
Thank you.
Take care.